One.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Showtime!
Don't be hating on my household attire, okay? I don't go to Walmart like this.
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. But the stream is good to the DLNGS.org. And ICChallengeAnalytics.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the gather's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1049 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight we have Joe.
Yep, I'm here.
We have
just enjoying my ice cream.
Good, good. Is it no carb or is it regular?
With low calorie.
Okay, okay. And we have Dave.
Hello.
And Joel will probably be showing up soon. And we got Paige.
Yo, 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 what's good?
Oh, is the beast there with you too?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great, wonderful. Before I ask you two the question I wanted to ask you, first things first, the important stuff needs to get said. Mute yourself. Yeah, that's right.
Well, but you didn't introduce her.
Lillian.
Wow, that was a terrible introduction. Gosh.
It's Lillian.
Try not to feel like you were the last unplanned child. And to the Linux Link Tech Show, Lillian.
Yay. Actually, it's Lillian. Yeah. Lillian here to talk about some technology stuff, too. And before we get into all the fun stuff, there was I actually got to be part of a beta deployment process for our VIP implementation that went by and large swimmingly well so far. Once we got access to it and I cleared off my plate and I spent the last day and 2 days working on it, and I managed to finish it this evening with a workflow in our repositories that will take our VIP WordPress application and build it and create an archive from it, and it pushes it up to Google Storage, Cloud Bucket and Storage. And then when it comes time to deploy, you just tell it what version you want and what environment you want to deploy it to, and it pulls it down and deploys it to their through their process, and it works swimmingly well. It's what this allows us to do, and is very convenient. This brings us kind of closer to how all our other applications are deployed. Now, the one exception are Cloud Functions. So what we do for our containerized deployments is that for an application that's in a container, we build that container, it's versioned, and it gets pushed up to the Google Artifactory container repository. And then when we go to deploy it, we just deploy it. And it works just like Docker Hub, but you're just pointing it to a different container repository. We used to use Quay. Quay was acquired by Red Hat. Works really great. Quay was great. I really loved Quay. They had a nice interface. It was very simple. Worked really well. Docker Hub works fantastic. You know, all these things kind of, once you authenticate, it's pretty seamless. There's a lot of integration that just works. So we're pushing that to container repository. The benefit is that if for some reason whatever you push out doesn't work as expected, it's easy to roll back because you just push out another container. We had a similar thing going on with Cloud Functions. But with Cloud Functions, it's kind of we didn't take it to the next step yet. And I guess you can containerize Cloud Functions, which I think we'll probably look into. But what we had done last week was our cloud functions were relatively simple. We had our GitHub repository was synced to a Google Source Cloud repository, which then you would kick off a build from that repository, and it would deploy it out to the Google Cloud Run, which or cloud functions, which operate out of Google Cloud Run. We switched that last week, I did, to using Cloud Build instead. And kind of what that does, it's, I like it. How that operates is that we can deploy directly from the source code in GitHub through a GitHub workflow, as opposed to having to have that repository synced up there to Google Cloud Source and then build it from there, passing it in to tell it to build it from there. The problem that we were having was after like 6 weeks to like 2 months, 3 months, the GitHub repository would become unbound to the source repository for some reason. Or I guess you would say the other way around. The source repository would just no longer sync for some reason. Like it would stop syncing. And we wouldn't notice until we would go to deploy an app and somebody would actually go look and make sure that the right version is deployed. And we find this out because something that we expected to have changed didn't change. And then we go looking around and realize, well, the syncing hadn't happened for like a month prior. So we would have to either do a manual sync on it or re-delete and recreate that hook to sync. Contacted various sources in Google, started with the Google groups, and they were like, read the documentation and file a bug. So I went and filed the bug, and you know, it drives me nuts when I have to go through this crap with support, and it's like, I explain the situation. I'm like, we have a bunch of Google Cloud source repositories synced to GitHub repositories. They stop functioning or syncing after like 6 weeks to 2 or 3 months. I can't give you a definitive time of when it happened or when it will happen. But we noticed this, and it's been going on for like over a year now. And they're like, well, it should work, and we don't see any problems, so there's no problem, right? And going back and forth with them about this got to be a pain in the ass. So using the cloud build method, you just create a YAML file, a YAML configuration file, to be able to build and deploy. Honestly, I don't quite understand why we had to go through with the config file, because all the config file does is just you pull in the GitHub action, you run the GitHub Cloud SDK, which is gcloud, and then it will run the gcloud command for build submit, which I'm not sure why we have to go through that whole process, but it's nicer, I think, than trying to list all the parameters out on the command line for it, where you have a config file that's all YAML and has it in there. So that worked out very well. So on the heels of that, guy I work with decided to do kind of the similar thing with our containerized applications. So instead of having it built with a couple of different GitHub actions that we did before, you could do the similar thing with just the cloud build deployment. So we created a build config file, and then we have a separate deploy file. And he got those two, I helped him with that, got those two working. So that was working well. Then I did the new beta deployment. That went off really well. I was very much enjoyed that. It was a challenge. I got a successful deployment about an hour and a half ago. The only downside was I was working in a test repository, and I was able to turn off all the testing that we do when we actually do a PR. So it made me able to merge my PRs and test what I needed to test in GitHub Actions and the workflows relatively quickly, until I realized once I had the actual build process good, I needed to do the deployment process. And that functions on a workflow that has to be in the main branch of the repository to actually get kicked off. One of the limitations is that if you want to run a GitHub workflow that's not in your main branch, you have to jump through a lot of hoops to do that. You can run it from the command line. The only restriction on that is you've had to have run it at some point in the past so that it appears like available in the main branch. So that has to exist there. Then you can like specify to run it from a different branch. Only this didn't exist in the main branch. So luckily what I could do was the deployment aspect of this was decoupled from the build, and it was decoupled from the other deployment that we do. So it was closer to how our applications function, not the VIP stuff. So I was able to add those deployment workflows in our main branch and run it only against this prototype branch that I was working on. And it didn't even need to connect to the prototype branch. All I needed to do was just pass it a version, and it would deploy to that. And I got that working. That worked out smoothly. But in talking about support, this was great. Dave, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, contacting tech support. So Saturday, we were sitting around watching some YouTube. We had a plan to start watching Fallout that night. Joe, have you watched Fallout yet?
No, I have not watched Fallout yet.
Okay.
I finished it.
Oh, you watched it, Dave. So we were going to watch Fallout that night. So we're sitting there, and Lillian had a birthday party to go to, and we were going to, you know, go out for dinner because Lillian wasn't there. So when the kids are away, we go out to the nice places, right, Lillian? Yeah.
Yeah. God.
That was a great dinner.
Look, even when we go out to, like, the not-so-nice places, we don't take the kids anymore because it's too damned expensive.
Wow, yeah. The truth comes
you
out.
Thankful,
you
Lily.
Hear that, Lily?
Yeah, they make me eat the garbage behind the trash
right.
can.
That's what you should be doing.
The truth comes out.
So, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours before Lillian was going to his birthday party, internet just goes out. And I'm like, you know, this happens. I come down, nothing on my end. I can see that the modem's not connecting. And I'm like, so I disconnect the modem and connect it back up, still won't connect. Did all the troubleshooting that I usually do. So then I looked at Cox outage. There was no outage reported. I called.
Jackie wants me to say hi to everybody.
Oh, tell her we say hi.
Everybody says hi.
I called their support, and they're like, all right, let me run a test in the area. They're like, there are no outages reported in your area. Everything seems to be fine. And I'm like, well, that's weird because I can't connect. And he's like, you know, there's a couple of things out, but it's not an area outage. And I'm like, well, this isn't a big area. You know, I'm down here on Fort Monroe here. It's not a big area, so there's only a couple of places around here. Is it all around me? That there's a few places. He's like, nah, it's not really that. So like, I'm like, he's like, best we could do is we'll have a technician come out. And I'm like, well, I guess okay. He's like, well, looks like the earliest we can get out is Monday. And I'm like, huh? All right, you got to do what you got to do. Let's go with that. So I go out and I see my neighbor outside, and I'm like, hey man, you got internet? I'm like, yeah, we got internet. Like, that's weird. This is across the street neighbor. And I go over to my next door neighbor's out working in his garden. I'm like, you got internet? And he's like, I don't know. My daughter said we don't have internet. They just came out and said we don't have internet. And I'm like, I don't have internet either. And the thing is, the internet comes in the cable comes in to his side, and then it runs through into my basement. And I'm like, oh shit. And oh shit was right, because while he was working in his garden, he cut the internet cable.
Ah.
And to be fair, the cable was like an inch under the ground. So it wasn't buried very deep.
After all the years of gardening mom did, it was the neighbor digging one single inch into the ground that did it in.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, 2 years, 3 years ago, Earl, who's on the other side of him, did the same thing, digging in his garden, cut his cable because it was only like 2 inches. You don't even know, because right where it comes in off of, like, it goes under the road, and then there's two cables there, and they split. One goes to the houses to the left. One goes to the houses to the right. Earl cut his. They came out. They had to patch it. Now Scott, our neighbor, cut his. So I had to call them back, and I explained the situation, and they're like, oh, we'll get somebody out there to look at it and fix it. And I'm like, is that going to cost anything? They're like, no, it shouldn't cost anything. You know, whatever. I'm like, because it's like a buried of couple inch, not even 3 inches under the ground. Like, that's ridiculous. There should be some kind of code or something that should be deeper than that. So you just, anyway, they're like, yeah, we're going to set something up. We'll call you back in about a half hour, right? So an hour and a half goes by, nothing. So I call them back, and they're like, let me see what we could do. And I'm on the phone for like 15 minutes. She comes back waiting. She's like, I tried. I couldn't get a hold of the on-call person, people in the area, so I have to escalate this. And finally she came back, and she's like, I can't get a hold of anybody. I'll keep trying, and I'll get back to you if I can get somebody out sooner.
Maybe her internet was out.
But, you know, otherwise we'll just have to keep the appointment for Monday, and they'll come out and fix it then. And I'm like, my neighbor used to do this. So the guy who cut the cable used to do this for a living. And I'm like, he says he can fix it. And she's like, maybe you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And he's like, I could have had this fixed an hour and a half ago, right? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't want you to go fix it. And then they come out and say, well, now we got to charge you because we got to do blah, blah, blah. You know, like, so yeah. So he called them, and they couldn't get anybody to come out to help him. And they were like, he's like, I can fix this. And on the phone, well, they were like, well, maybe you should. Right. So like 15 minutes, 20 minutes after he got off the phone with them, we had left, right? He had it fixed and it was running perfectly. So
and then Cox bills him for the cable repair, of course. Well, right?
So Monday comes, and I kept the appointment because I'm like, yeah, I better keep the appointment. And the guy comes, and I explain the situation. I'm like, look, here's the deal. We go out. I show him where it is in the garden, you know, because he didn't fill – he left it open there. And the guy looked at it, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to have to replace this. Because what he did was he fixed it, and it works fine. But he did with what he had, so he electrically – he used electrical tape on it to cover it. And the guy said, well, it's probably, you know, in a couple of months, it's probably going to end up getting water in it and stuff. We're going to have to come out and fix it anyway. So he said, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to run a whole new cable from the box into the house, into the where it goes in. And I said, yeah, you're going to do that today. And he's like, no, I don't have the equipment to do that. And he's like, I'm like, oh, you're going to have to patch it today. He's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to have to do. So I told him, you know, go right ahead. He took about a half hour. It took him to do that. So I was cut off for about a half hour. Not too bad. He got it fixed. The thing is, I told him, I said, you can put in the work order to have them come out and fix it, but I don't really think they're going to be able to run a new cable because this is under the Antiquities Act. So you have to go through a lot of humps and hoops to be able to do, yeah, humps and hoops to be able to do kind of the maintenance like that with digging or anything. And you're really not allowed to dig more than 6 inches here because there's possibility of exploded ordnance.
Well, that explains your problem right there. These government hoops and loops, they're trying to go straight through humps. You're supposed to go over those guys.
Yeah, go over
those. Those are definitely things you go over, not through.
Yeah. So they're talking about in order to get a new cable in, and I don't know if there's any conduit run anywhere, because this cable from, at least I know from where it comes out of under the road to the house, is not in any kind of conduit. It's just like buried under the ground. I don't know if there's any kind of conduit that goes under the road. So I don't know how they would dig a whole new
maybe
easily a cable. But anyway,
what was your total downtime?
My total downtime on Saturday, probably 3-4 hours.
Okay.
And then Monday was about a half hour.
I have a similar experience, but it ended up being better. Last year, I buried about 100 yards of Ethernet cable from my parents' house to a tiny house that my sister was putting in the field behind their house because, long story, my dad had cancer, still has it. But anyway, she was going to live down here temporarily to watch him, but she needed internet. So I ran the cable from the router of my dad's house to her tiny home. And I was digging a trench with a tractor and ended up tearing the fiber optic cable. It tore it in half that provided internet for my dad's house. But we got it fixed in 45 minutes. We called the fiber optic people. They were out there like 30 minutes and they were gone in 45.
Did they charge you for it?
Nope, not a dime.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. We were just lucky they were in the neighborhood and they came right over.
I want
That's why they weren't there for you on Monday, because they were in his neighborhood.
Yeah, you bastard. Now, one thing before
everyone in the world shares one team, all right? And if they just happen to be in your neighborhood, that's the week you sever your cable. Didn't you know?
Right.
Now, before we get on to a bunch of other things, there's one thing I do want to clear up. And this is something, and Paige, I'm going to have to apologize to you, because I didn't think you were ever going to come back on the show, and I had mentioned this problem that you had. I know. So
the cat's out of the bag now. Well, yeah, geez.
Can you cover that problem that we talked about a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Really blew me away.
So basically I have we have one of our work vans for our warehouse location. It's like a Sprinter type van. So it's a 2014 Nissan Sprinter van. And it has an issue where the transmission is just like, it got all floppy and needed to be replaced. It just wasn't catching. When you try to drive it on the road, you try to accelerate, you get to road speeds, and it just like completely crumbles apart and it just will not keep going and slips all the way until it stops running at all. And that happens every time you try to run it at like any sort of reasonable speed. So they sent it. So they sent it to the mechanic, and the mechanic rebuilt the transmission like 3-4 times, and it didn't make a difference. And then they sent it to the Nissan dealership, and they rebuilt the transmission and didn't make a difference. And then the Nissan dealership sent it back to the mechanic, and then the mechanic was like, well, we could try rebuilding the transmission again. And we're just like, well, why would we do that? Like, why would we keep rebuilding this transmission? Because they tried to say that the first time could have been because it was a reuse transmission, and then the second time we used the brand new transmission of the Nissan dealership, and there's something like that. There was like two or three redone transmissions by the time we said, okay, we need to look at what else could potentially be the problem. And so basically, when it was all said and done, I can't remember who exactly said this, but somebody said that what it boils down, I think it was a customer in my shop actually, and he said that probably what it boils down to, and I confirmed it by doing some Googling, is that with this particular type of vehicle, there's so many computers in it, and these computers communicate between the different parts. So there's a computer in the transmission, and there's a computer in the engine, and for some reason, they did software updates to their software to the point where there's no longer a usable patch for the software for this car's transmission if it breaks down and you need to fix it, or if it breaks and it needs to be replaced. So basically,
there's no available or no easily available. I say no available. I'm sure it's somewhere. I'm sure someone can fix it, but it's like trying to find a specialist heart surgeon who fixes one particular tiny piece of your heart. It's like you need to have a certain version of the software for the transmission computer in the 2014 Nissan Sprinter van that is not available to anybody who's available to fix it. So it's unfixable. So we basically, we bought this van. It has this issue with the transmission and it is completely unfixable to everyone that we've been able to contact to try to fix it. So we just have this van that is completely unusable because we don't have the right software to make the transition cooperate with the engine.
It's one of them Nissan NB vans, right?
Yeah, like one of those cargo vans for like warehouse use.
Oh, just throw a 350 in there.
You know, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure that that we're gonna do anything except enter it in the next demolition derby at this point. I mean, so why not, right?
Now, is it because you can't get the updated software on there, or the patched version of the software doesn't work with that transmission, or is it just that once you put that component in with that updated software, it doesn't work with the other components?
That's a great question. That is a really great question. When I complete my 4-year degree at Nissan Sprinter Van University, I will certainly let you know.
I'm just saying, yank out the whole drivetrain and put something older in.
I think we should just buy a couple horses and hitch the thing up to the horses and just,
pull an engine out of a Model T, you'll be fine.
Yeah, right.
How much
get a couple of well-meaning warehouse workers to just get in there and Flintstones it,
right?
How much have you spent on trying to get this thing fixed?
So this was Copart. This was a Copart mistake. Have you guys heard of Copart, the auction the auction app? Yeah, this was a venture down the Copart alley, which was just a horrible, horrible mistake. Every single thing we auctioned at Copart was a disaster. And this was one of them. So basically, I don't know, just don't ever use Copart. Don't trust Copart. Their customer service is terrible. Their reviews are terrible. And their cars are crap. This is crap. Don't use Copart.
That's where the cars go if they total them.
Yeah, and they are 100%. Like, some people say you can, like, find good finds on there, and I'm pretty sure they only mean that you can get scammed and then scam other people, because that's pretty much all it is. It's good for parts, I guess. The part we wanted was a running car, so we were the fools in that scenario.
Copart is where, if you're on YouTube... And I don't know if their videos are still up, but there's a guy by the name of Sam Crack who bought one of the Domino's Pizza DXP cars. That's the car they had with the warming oven in the back to keep the pizza hot.
Oh, wow. I feel like Copart is where you go if you're getting tired of your run-of-the-mill pyramid scheme and you're looking for like a better, more interesting way to lose all your money. But you're not quite ready for Bitcoin or stocks.
Yeah, they can't call it the Domino's Pizza Car because Domino's doesn't want them to call it that, even though that's what it is. It's like, you know, why are you bullshitting people?
But is it just the one, or are there multiple that have been auctioned at Copart that they refuse to acknowledge?
Like, he bought like 3 of them.
Oh, wow. And they've just been written off the Domino's lineage?
Yeah. Well, they don't do them anymore. Actually, Domino's Pizza DXP. Look at that on YouTube. You'll see what I mean. It's basically a Chevrolet, I want to say the Sonic, where they took out the back seats and they've got an oven in it. deep
stuff. I'm sorry. It's Domino's Pizza what? Because I'm about to write Domino's Pizza DMT, and I know that's not right. So
Delta X-ray Papa.
D-X-D. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, he actually not just bought those. He's bought lots of cars from Copart, so he's got lots of adventures with them. Most of the stuff he bought has been totaled. So, but the first video that comes when you search for that is the Sam Crack video. So that's how what he goes by. But yeah, I would not. You know, Copart is where when I totaled my 2017 Traverse by hitting a guardrail, and which punched a hole in the A pillar. And broke the windshield all over me. That's where it ended up at. I had to go there to drop off paperwork from my insurance company or something so that they'd release the money so that I can go buy a new car. So, yeah. And you're right. And it was even worse because the pandemic was still happening when that happened. So I drove up there, and you have to scan a QR code, all right? And they'll send you a text message when you can come into the office, all right?
As if you want to be there.
Right. And all I'm doing is dropping off paperwork, and that's it, you know, all right? And I did that, and I stood outside that office for 45 fucking minutes. I'm like, really? Really? I mean, and he's like, well, at the time we left listed for our opening hours, which is exactly when I showed up, we have our meeting. And I'm like, we can come in early and meet. God.
Well, listen, okay? Because first of all, you made an appointment for Copart. Second of all, the wait is part of the experience, okay? If you're going to have an appointment at Copart, you need to have a 25-minute wait. Otherwise, what are you there for?
Oh, at least, right?
Yeah, at least.
But on the more cars things, my son is really enjoying his automotive maintenance stuff he's taking. So he's probably going to go become a mechanic. They didn't come fix Paige's van.
Well, my van is completely gone, totaled, absolutely. Oh well, my new van has problems, but that's small. My new van has a problem where the trunk won't open. But the bigger problem is that the insurance had a huge issue, and for 2 months I technically was uninsured because I had a Virginia policy with New York tags, which, first of all, I didn't know was a problem. Second of all, my auto policy said New York at the top, but apparently it was for Virginia. So now I have to mail the New York DMV to be like, please don't suspend my license, thanks. And right. Then pay them $700 for New York insurance. Dear New York, why is your insurance so expensive?
Can't you get the tags, Jane?
Well, that's what I thought until I tried to do that and went to the DMV and realized that this car is a salvage title, which in Virginia, if you have a salvage title car, you can't drive it on the interstate or highways. So that's not going to work. So I have 2 years to figure out who I can sell this car to.
Wait, what does that mean by a salvage title?
It means like this car was salvaged, like it got into an accident.
It was totaled.
Considered it a total loss, even though it runs perfect. I don't know. I mean, you know what? It could have been an insurance scam thing, now
that's
that I think about
not
it.
Not a matter of it being an insurance scam, but it's considered totaled if the insurance payout would be more than the value of the vehicle.
Well, the vehicle is a 2019 with no miles. The only problem is the trunk doesn't open. Or I don't know how they considered it a totaled car, but it's fine.
Right. If the insurance payout to fix the vehicle was more than the vehicle was worth.
So it's a numbers thing.
Well, yeah. And there's also another reason they've been totaling out. Because of supply chain issues, if they couldn't get the fucking part in a reasonable amount of time to fix the car, they would total it.
Oh, I guess kind of coming out from pandemic times, that could have been considerably a thing. But it's a great car. It runs great. I guess in New York, you can have a salvage title and you can drive it on most roadways, and in Virginia, you can't. I didn't realize that, but I have New York tags for the next 2 years, and I'll just keep the New York insurance, I guess.
You do own the vehicle, but and this is fraud. If you know somebody that runs a chop shop, you can have a new VIN number real quick.
I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm going to commit fraud on a recorded podcast live to everybody. That's definitely not what I'm going to do. And you should not give me the phone number of your friend who does that, because I would never right. do that. That's never something.
I'm not a good, upstanding citizen, would never do that. But,
and I would never contact your guy in Iowa and make a trip down to Iowa. That is never something I would do, but definitely don't message me about it later. Thanks.
Right?
You gotta do what you gotta do. No, but yeah, I didn't know any of that. So, the more you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't commit fraud, people.
But if being a normal citizen trying to do your due diligence doesn't work out, then that's always a second option for you.
Well, see, and you bring up that's a real interesting thing you're bringing up, is all states kind of have different ideas of what's safe automotive wise.
Oh yeah, dude, my car literally like drives itself, tells me if I'm against a line, like it's like I'm driving with like my mom isn't even that concerned about my driving.
Oh,
you know,
that's not right. That's not even the thing though. What I was gonna say is there's a YouTube channel by the name of Junkyard Digs. That dude will find like cars that have been sitting in a barn for like ever and just do the bare minimum to get the thing drivable. All right. And apparently in Iowa, as long as you don't have to have tags for 30 days at all, like not even temps. So all you have to do to drive the car on the road right after you buy it is insure it. And that's it.
Well, I'm selling to somebody there. Yeah, somebody in Iowa needs to buy this car from me.
Right? No other state does it like that. I've never heard of that before, but apparently that's the way it is. Like, he bought, like, I just watched the video. Actually, his fiance, who goes by the name of Junkyard Mook. What a name, Mook. Anyway, they put together a 1972 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme. Got it running, and they drove 2,900 miles on it during the 2023 Hot Rod Power Tour, which is basically you'd basically drive your jalopies from to about four or five different locations over the course of a week. So, yeah.
Well, and there you go.
They did have tags on this one though, because I think she's kept this one. But they do also, like, they had like a Gremlin X. Remember those, the Gremlins from the AMC? You know, really bad cars I've seen on his channel.
Well, if they're from junkyards or Copart, makes sense.
Yep.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that so I have this beautiful, amazing car that I fell in love with only to realize. Now, it's actually kind of funny, though, because I got the notification in the mail from the New York DMV while I was kind of dealing with, like, surgery stuff. So I got the notice in February that I had, quote-unquote, lapsed in my insurance New York-wise, because the policy that they made for me was a Virginia policy for the new car. But then I went and I had surgery and everything, blah, blah, blah. So I come back and I open my mail that I had missed while I was gone, like kind of out of commission. And I see this notice. It's like dated February 15th. I'm opening it like March 20th. And it's like, in 91 days, your license will be suspended if you blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Great. That's fun.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Oh, my God. I searched like a Nissan NV salvage, and I found a website by the name of SCA Options that has a there I guess they're trying to sell this 2016 that's literally burnout, man. Or I'm like, why would you even buy that? There doesn't even look like a single body panel that you could salvage from it. It's like, really?
They're like, let's just put it up and see what happens.
Right? I guess there might be some
maybe a blind person will fall for it.
Right. Yeah, Copart's a big, not scam. Cause I think the idea isn't that you'd buy the car and actually put it back together and make it runnable again. The idea is that you buy the car and you buy it for the parts primarily. It's
well,
like buying a
I wish they had shared that
somewhere.
Idea with me. I wish they had shared that idea with me when I put my business credit card on it and said, I want that car for my business to go on the street, vroom, vroom.
In Virginia, no less.
In Virginia. Although that car was not a Copart car. That was just a friend-to-a-friend car. The Copart cars, none of them ran.
Right.
But it is what it is. You lose, you win, you learn, you know.
Absolutely.
Money, money, money.
So, who else has read the three-body problem?
I did.
Okay, so who's watched the show? Because I haven't watched it yet. I want to know if it's any good.
Wait, is this a book club now?
It's always been a book club.
Nobody told me that was a weekly reading.
It's always been a book club.
Wow.
Which show are you talking about? You're talking about the Netflix show, right?
I'm talking about the new one, yeah.
It's good.
Dave watched it. I didn't watch it yet. I gotta
Does it match
the
book pretty well?
In six episodes?
They condensed some characters. They brought characters that appear in later books. They brought them in early, and they sort of glossed over just a little bit of the science. I mean, the physics, the thought experiments about the shooter and the farmer and all that, you know, they left a lot of that stuff out. But it's the premise-wise, it's the same. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because my wife enjoyed it, and it's the kind of thing she wouldn't enjoy. I think if it were any thicker in the science, she wouldn't have enjoyed it at all. But it was good. It really was good. I'm looking for season two is supposed to be even better, because book one is the weakest of the three anyway. But it was good. I enjoyed it.
Not knowing anything about what you guys are talking about, I did just want to interject really quick about what you had just said about the science being too thick for her to enjoy if it was depicted in the show. And some of the adaptations I've been seeing lately, not this one in particular, but just in general, I've noticed that they kind of do that where they'll dumb down certain things for just general viewing of people who are not necessarily into that particular book or something. And it kind of leaves the fans disappointed, but I guess makes more money on the marketing side.
I mean, this is the most expensive TV show ever made to date. I think it was $16 million for 8 episodes. So I understand them wanting to get, you know, a large number of people to want to watch it.
If you're looking for a simple explanation of the three-body problem, just go on YouTube and find the Neil deGrasse Tyson Explains the Three-Body Problem video. He does it very well.
Yeah. But I was a little disappointed though with the group of people that are for the Trisolarians. They're sort of portrayed as a cult, and they leave out a couple of what I thought were really good in the book explanations for some things with the shooter and the farmer and multi-dimensional.
The turkeys and the universes. Farmer and the shooter.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they left all that out, which I thought. I really love that part. I sort of wanted it to be in there, but
that was in the TV show, the Chinese version, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, because I'm part of the way through that. I'm not even halfway through it yet.
Yeah, I'm not either. I got to finish it.
They had much longer seasons for that one, though, didn't they?
It was 22 or 30 episodes for the Chinese.
Yeah.
And that's just the first book, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's like
30 episodes, and they're all like 40 minutes long at least.
Yeah, but they stuck to the book, you know, rigidly in that one.
They could have just read the book in less time, I think.
But it's really good, though. It's worth watching, the Amazon one.
Wait, the Amazon one? Or are you talking about the Netflix one?
The Netflix one, yeah.
Yeah.
And I went and watched the Judgment Day scene and compared it to the Chinese version. And for Netflix to have spent, you know, $2 million per episode, the Chinese version is pretty doggone good for what they do to the Judgment Day ship. But it's not as good. It's the, you know, and in the book, I think the Judgment Day, you were really only concerned about one passenger who was sort of innocent. In the book, the TV show, they sort of make it about everybody on there. So they blow it up, make it a little bit more emotional. But it was really good. It's worth watching, Jim.
Okay.
It's like, well, the problem, what the way Paige described it reminded me of how they used the book Ready Player One when they made the movie. Because, you know, normal people aren't going to know what a lich is.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah. And stuff like that. Well, if you play D&D, yeah, you might know what a lich is. But
why wouldn't they know what a lich is?
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but the book.
Who are these people?
Yeah, I know. The book was written for us. We got excited reading this stuff. And then when, you know, of course, when they make a movie out of it, it has to be palatable for more than just
normal
audiences. Or they'll lose their money.
You know what? It didn't stop anybody from watching Stranger Things when they were talking about demigorgons.
You're right.
Well, yeah. Why I didn't get into it.
Stranger Things did not age well.
I don't worship demigods.
Oh, hold on.
Right.
You know what? I will come back at that and say, I don't think you need to know what a lich is to appreciate the first part of Ready Player One.
No, but it wouldn't be very movie. It wouldn't be very exciting with showing two people standing next to each other playing joust. I mean, come on. I mean, it's fun doing it, but watching somebody? Nah, I don't know.
I was telling Joe he needed to tell you guys I have a sticker on the back of my car that says I don't follow demigods. And everybody keeps thinking it's part of the Stranger Things.
It's Percy Jackson.
demagogues are like.
I know what they are. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, not demigods, but demagogue.
Oh.
It's okay. The people who think it's part of Stranger Things are probably just as confused as we are.
I think we're all
confused.
Demagogue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get everybody walking up and they're like, I love Stranger Things. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, that's my nice political bumper sticker.
Yeah, you've unintentionally filtered out all the people that you either do or don't want to associate with further based off how much you like Stranger Things.
Oh, that's easy. Here, I live in Red County, Texas. Do you know how easy that is? All I have to do is just look and you can see the sea of MAGA hats or Trump flags and I'm good. It's really easy to ignore him. Oh yeah, Joe, I was just telling Joe about that and he's going to tell you guys he was talking about the Stranger Things and everything and I started laughing.
But the Fallout TV show, my wife really enjoyed it. Of course, it's nowhere near as heavy in the science and physics as Three Body, but she knew nothing about it, but she enjoyed it. It was really well done.
I never played the game. I may have to watch the series though. My sister-in-law really digged it. She loves the game.
They did a really good job on the TV show. I played two of the games, and I think I played the first two, but it's good. Did you ever get to watch it, Dan? Or was your internet not up yet?
They got him. Black helicopters got him, man. Joe's working out.
Yeah, Joe's working out.
Sounds like a self-checkout line. Like a busy self-checkout area.
Yeah.
Just ambient noise and beeping.
Well, the you're hearing the, it's the pulley. He has his own, he kind of made his own pulley setups and stuff so he could work out and lift heavier things and not
okay.
beat himself.
Gotcha. I was getting a little bit of PTSD from my time at Target, but that makes sense.
Well, and I asked him not to try to kill himself in the garage.
That is a thing, though, man. I worked retail at Meijer, and honest to God, I woke up practically screaming because in my dream I heard beep, beep, beep. I'm like, God, not again.
Yeah, I manage a vape shop. I've been managing a vape shop for the past 2 years, and we have this front door alarm, and it has a particular sound, and it says front door, and I hear that sound when I'm at home, when I'm sleeping. Like it's my exploding head syndrome sound to wake up to when I'm gonna drift away at night. So
my first job was KFC, and I still really can't eat KFC. I really can't eat KFC. The only time I actually craved was the gravy when I was pregnant.
Did the uniform ever smell normal, or did it always smell of chicken grease?
I would wash it and leave it in my car and go, because I was in high school at the time, and I'd leave it in my car hung up so I could go straight from class because I got out early and go to work. My car reeked of KFC.
Now, that must have been so great for the first week and then the worst thing in the world for the rest of your time there.
Actually, my dad loved it because I got free wings every night. My dad was like, the spicy wings, if you get a chance, if you can get those, bring them home. And he was eating. My dad's a person that can eat the same meal every day for years.
That's me.
I can't do that. I have to switch it up. I cannot eat the same thing over and over again.
Right.
I have to switch it up.
Yeah, and then I did retail, and
I had a job in college, and it was at a bakery, but not like a small shop. This was a plant. I mean, it was an industrial complex, and they made bread, and that was the best place to work smell wise. You pull in the parking lot, and it's all you smell is bread. You go inside, and all you smell is bread. It was awesome.
Oh yeah, you lucked out on that one. That sounds great.
Yeah, my college job was working at a grocery store bakery, and that was okay. I learned how to make donuts once.
Wow, look at all of us bakers. I worked in a bakery in college too. That's so funny.
Yeah,
I worked at a steak joint.
My first job was working at good old BK making them Whoppers. They always put me on fries or specialty. Making like the chicken sandwiches and the whalers and the veal sandwiches they used to have.
But did you have it your way?
Oh yeah, every time.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's how I discovered that dipping chicken tenders in mayonnaise or tartar sauce was delicious.
The special orders did not upset you then.
No.
No, he wanted it his way. His way. Not anybody else's way. Okay.
I didn't get paid enough to care. It was just like, okay.
Right. Right. It's like the day you got the call from your manager says, we're not busy. We don't need you tonight. And I'm like, thank God.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, the one day I went home after working fries, I ran my elbow in the side of a hot fry basket, and I got home and I looked at my elbow in the mirror, and there was grid marks on my elbow. I'm like,
oh man, battle scars.
Yeah, right.
That's what to tell your grandkids about.
They're gone now, thankfully. But man, I'm telling you. And then tearing down at close was probably the most dangerous time to work at Burger King, because they would tear the boiler down. So, and one of the manager was like really like this real brave idiot who like didn't even wait for the thing to completely cool down. He grabbed the hot grids from the burgers, you know, from the section that cooked the burgers, and just put on these big old hot gloves, you know, like potholder style gloves, you know, but bigger and thicker, and then just grab that thing, yank it out, and then go walk it over to the sink and throw it in there. And if you were in his way, man, you're gonna get your ass burnt, man. I'm telling you. In the 80s, they didn't have these, you didn't wear a t-shirt when you worked at Burger King. You wore a polo, and that polo was made out of the worst polyester nylon. Oh, God, was it McDonald's so working in
double knit.
Every day you cosplayed as a Burger King employee, and you were dedicated.
God, it was horrible, man. Ugh. But,
that's funny though, because the time I worked for Little Caesars, that's the only time I ever worked like right. A legitimate fast food franchise job. That was the cleanest kitchen I ever worked in, and every other kitchen I ever worked in, mom and pop, oh my God, disgusting. Uh-huh. But the Little Caesars one, spick and span.
Just like watching the Kitchen Nightmares from Gordon Ramsay.
Yep, exactly. Oh, like that. Exactly. Oh, like that.
God, it's disgusting.
Now, the McDonald's I worked at in high school, it was a layer of grease on everything behind the counter. I mean, it was always there. You'd slip and fall.
I'm gonna hand you back to Joe. He's back.
The only thing that my brother worked at McDonald's when they made the pizzas. So one day I go in there, and I said, "Hey Tim, I want to buy a pizza." He's like, "Oh, what do you want on it?" And I'm like, "Well, I just want this, you know, like whatever the, you know, like the pepperoni pizza or whatever it is." He's like, "Nah." He's like, "I'll hook you up." And let me tell you, that was the best damn McDonald's pizza I ever had
when they had their pizzas.
Oh, no, yeah, it was
a
delicious.
Full hookup on a McDonald's pizza like could go one bar. Of two completely different ways and not anywhere centrist, okay?
Right. Yeah, I mean, hey, don't get me wrong, it's still a McDonald's pizza, so it wasn't the best
pizza. It was
pizza
the best
ever
garbage
ate.
I ever put in my mouth.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. No, McDonald's pizzas were okay. I mean, they were not, like... Let's see, what was the worst pizza I ever had?
As a control, would you be able to compare it to modern-day 7-Eleven pizzas?
Oh, that's 10 times worse.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
7-Eleven pizza.
So we're talking like Papa John's or Domino's quality then, because like...
It was, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, huh. It was pretty decent. I mean, it wasn't completely horrible, but... Yeah, it wasn't the best. I mean,
this in the 80s or something when McDonald's sucked a little less.
Yeah.
And the young one was shocked as the elders described the golden era. Yeah.
You're talking like McDonald's. 89 through 92, right? You know, that's about when it was. Yeah. But you know, it's you know,
the golden years for the golden arches.
Yeah. There's people that speak fond about
it. Are you calling us old?
I worked there.
Yes, we are.
It was subtly implied.
Oh, subtly implied. Well, now I still feel horrible.
No,
thank
because
you.
I'm getting old too, okay? So it's shame for both of us. Yeah, I used to be the little cute voice on the freaking intro thing. I've been replaced too, buddy. It's okay.
That's okay. It's Kai on there now, and she's 21.
Oh, great. Younger, fresher model. Cool. Glad we're doing that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. the videos that they used to show you to train you to do that fucking shitty job were so cringe, man. I'm telling you. It's like acting like you're coming there and having a career working at Burger King or McDonald's. I'm like, no, I'm here just to make some money right now. And as soon as I get something better, I'm fucking gone.
Oh, yeah. I love when they play that. Like, it's so shocking to me when you have those onboarding training, like, video scenarios. The one that's always the most shocking to me, and the last time I saw it was at Target, was, like, the active shooter ones. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, my God, I'm being paid minimum wage, and I have to expect that I might be shot at. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I'm
might as well
out.
Join the military. At least they got better health care.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get free college education.
That's
went down that route for 2 years.
What branch?
That's right.
Air Force. Chair Force.
Chair Force.
But I got out for medical problems with the endometriosis.
They didn't
make me pay back the college, though, so I got 2 free years. I'm going back in the fall to VCU to finish.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I'll only have to do 1 more year, so all in all, it'll only be 3 years spent in college, hopefully, fingers crossed. So.
Well, I got my first grade for my first class and my master's degree, and I got an A. Not only did I get an A, but I got a fucking 100%. I have no idea how I did that.
Hell yeah, nerd power.
It's like... Yeah, it was leadership and organizational behavior, basically learning management bullshit, you know?
Well, it's cool he got 100, not to brag, but I got 103, so, yeah, but that's cool you got 100, that's really cool.
Right.
Yeah, I remember when I used to get hundreds, really cool.
Right.
No, but that's always a good feeling when you do really well in a class you didn't even try.
it's like, we get to the end of, like... The only thing we had to turn in the last week was the final course project. And the way the instructor said it in the class, he said, well, you just take all the stuff you did for the past 2 courses and put it together, and that's your paper. And I'm like, is it that fucking simple? I'm like, all right. So I did that. I emailed my group and said, "Here's our finished paper. Go ahead, submit it. I emailed the instructor to clarify. He never emailed back. I submit it last Friday, and I get the grade Sunday, and I'm like, oh, okay.
It was the lesson the whole time was to not overcomplicate your life. That was
basically
the
lesson. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the
kind that
the
is kind not of, an invaluable lesson.
No, well,
to be honest,
the live. It was done through Engagely. I don't know if you've ever used that or not, Paige.
No, because every single time they do some sort of online software for learning, it changes every year
with every
institution.
Yeah.
There's how many institutions are there in the United States? There's that many softwares.
Too many, and I work for most of them.
Yep, there's that many different softwares.
Yeah, I work for most of them. But
yep.
Anyway, It was really interesting and really cool. The only thing that I kind of thought was kind of lame was this is a master's degree course and the dude's using Kahoot at the beginning of class. It was kind of lame but fun, you know?
Yeah, the last time I played Kahoot was at like a sophomore college party at somebody's house.
Right.
And I was like, what is happening right now? And then I left.
You ask a question, and then everyone takes their phone and presses the... I'm like, Jesus. But we did get to talk to the president and CEO of DeVry University, Elisa Watt.
Through Kahoot?
She was really nice. No, that was through the Engagely class that we had. We had a live... That's what we used for... It's like an education-oriented version of Zoom.
Damn it, said the Kahoot PR marketing team.
The Kahoot was just what this instructor used. So now the next one is innovation and technology. I'm like, oh, another not really technical class in my management and informational systems master's degree. Okay.
And you better watch out, because one of these classes is going to hit you with a, and now you got to memorize 300 pages of something, or you're going to fail.
Yeah, well. And I looked through the syllabus already for the next class, which starts, like, next week. And it's like, no exams again. Okay, I'm cool with that. Just papers. Well,
there you
that
go.
Works.
That there works. You go. I don't know what I'm about to get into, because when I was studying math, computer science, and Arabic. And none of those fields are fields I want to continue to do higher education studies on. After writing 10-page papers in advanced theoretical mathematics, hating computer science enough to drop it as a minor, and learning Arabic to a point where I can speak with my bosses and coworkers perfectly fine, and I don't really feel like being tested on it. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's these math courses that are the reason why we have Common Core math now in schools.
I did knot theory. The theory of knots.
Oh,
applying
Lord.
Mathematical functions to the permutations of crossing and uncrossings of knots. And that's where I want to keep things. I don't want to continue anymore from that. That's where things should die. You die on the knot theory hill.
Yeah.
You die or you go crazy.
Yeah, it's like, my concentration will be cybersecurity, which I can't wait to take those classes, because that's one I'm more interested in, but yeah, we'll see how it goes, see if I can, I think, I don't have to pay my tuition until August. I'm on a deferred plan. So that basically once I get the grades and the final bill, I send that in my company's form and my grades, and then they'll cut a check to the school and pay they pay 90%. So I only have to pay 10%. I think my total tuition for the March in May session would be like $1,900, I think.
And so they cover that if you pass, or they cover that no matter what?
I have to get a B or better.
Oh, wow. That's pretty strict.
So, yep. So,
see, with my job, since I work at a vape shop, I just get this like punch card, and I have to hook 10 kids on nicotine, and then they'll pay for my college.
Or vapes. Man, vaping, it's, I'd never do it, but it's one of those interesting things that I'm semi, like, the science behind it is very interesting to me for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, the thing about vapes and, like, that whole vaping culture to me is, like, the part of it that makes a whole lot of sense is, like, adults don't really have, like, things to indulge in, like candy, for instance, or like sweets and stuff, like when you're a kid, like you get snacks and candy and sweets and all sorts of stuff. But like now that I'm not even that old, I'm like 25 years
old.
Joel
never stopped with that stuff.
But like, right, but I can't eat candy and snacks like that because of my skin problem and my endometriosis, and I don't know, like I don't even like food anymore because it always bothers my stomach or my skin so bad. That I've gotten to vaping mainly because I was like, I like candy and I like, you know, desserts and sweets, but when I eat them, like, my body, like, shuts down, so. And then I started vaping, and I was like, well, there are side effects, but they're not as bad as the ones I was having when I was working at a bakery eating cakes all day. So it's like, no matter what I work near, I'm going to consume.
Right.
Because it's fun, because most people that I know would be like, vaping, what is, like, ugh, I would never even go near that, which is so weird to me because all the people I know from work are the complete opposite, but there's almost, like, no in-between. Like, there are no people who are like, I kind of vape at all, really. It's like, and I think people are heavily influenced by their spheres because the people I know who vape are, they're all vaping, and the people I know who don't vape, none of them are vaping.
Yeah, I guess right. It was a little different with cigarettes back in the day.
Yeah, because yeah.
You had that group of people that were social smokers. They'd only smoke when somebody else was around. But really, the whole thing was is they didn't want to buy their own cigarettes. and then you have the people that would only smoke when they drank. But considering how often they drank.
That was me.
Yeah. So.
It was.
It's just so funny because I'm at work so much that I have this kind of perception that everybody is just like all about vapes, and then I leave my work sphere and I'm like, oh, people don't really care about like vapes and vape culture and vaping, but that's my world. Like that's my 24/7 is vapes and drugs, kratom, vapes, nicotine, THCA, Delta.
Yeah. Well, what's getting me is that I can no longer find locally CBD, vapable CBD that doesn't have like the Kratom or the Delta 8 or something like that in it. And it's like,
yeah, a legitimate problem.
Yeah, I don't want to get high. I just want the anti-swelling and the pain relief from the CBD. And it's like, I guess I'm the only person that doesn't want to get high.
No, and you know what? That is a huge problem. And not only is it a problem to not be able to access any products that don't have CBD in them, but it's like as a manufacturer, it's a really big problem because manufacturers will make those products and they sit on the shelves and expire because nobody wants them except for a select number of people. But the main reason why nobody wants them is because nobody talks about how beneficial they are. Because CBD is amazingly beneficial for inflammation, swelling, pain management, all sorts of stuff like that. Without any sort of neurotoxic side effects. And not only that, but especially in Virginia, but in other states that are implementing new laws about how like the Delta hemp and THC stuff works, they're putting these like weird regulations on THC and CBD. So for instance, in Virginia, there's this new law that requires all Delta products to have a 25-to-1 ratio of CBD to THC. So basically that means for every 1 milligram of THC, there has to be 25 milligrams of CBD. So if you have a 5 milligram gummy, a 5 milligram Delta 9 gummy, you have to have then 125 milligrams of CBD, which is a huge problem because the price of CBD is going to skyrocket if that continues on trend-wise to be a necessity, because then all these companies are going to require these insane amounts of CBD for their product, which is just ridiculous. And the only reason they do it is to completely obliterate what's available on the market from being sold in the state, but it's like they're putting an arbitrary stipulation that actually really significantly affects quite a healthy thing that should be more available to people. You know, it's really weird.
Yeah.
But then yeah, vaping is crazy.
You get Ohio where it's legal for, I have to go look, I think it's legal for, you don't have to have the card anymore in Ohio. So you don't.
It's so weird because federally, since the Delta stuff is legal, like in my mind, you could go to any state and go to a vape shop and probably buy THC stuff. I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Because of the federal legality of it. Now, like I said, Virginia and I believe some other states are contesting the federal bill, which is not really constitutional, but is, you know, if they make a state bill that makes it illegal, then it's illegal and you'll get in trouble even though it's unconstitutional. So yeah, you can pretty much get high and buy it semi-legally in any vape shop nearby if you know what rewards to you, especially if you the kind of lottery, you know.
I have to check with my I have a friend that used to be used to go to my church. He and his dad moved to another church to help them out. But he is fighting Crohn's, and I want to say I think he took CBD for Crohn's. I would imagine,
yeah, because Crohn's is highly inflammatory, and CBD is just so great about inflammation. Yeah. I mean, I use it personally, but I also recommend it to like all of my patients that come in with pain problems. But I've had people who come in with like, you know, swelling in their arms to the point where they can't lift their arm like over shoulder height, and they put some CBD lotion on, and then 10 minutes later, like they have almost full range of motion. Like it's just so such a potent anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, I use it for my hip when it gets inflamed because, you know, I'm old, like you said, and falling apart. Or when my shoulder starts acting up.
Right. Now, I bring good news is I'm 4 pounds away from my next weighed what I weighed out today in 20 years.
Wow, that's great.
Are you still extending your walks? Job,
am I still what? Extending my walks?
Yes. In preparation.
Well, I don't see the problem is doing the hike training is how long it takes to do the longer hikes I want to do in preparation, you know? Right. So like I only did 4 miles on Sunday but I did do it on the first natural trail because the trails I've been doing are asphalt trails. I can tell you my feet feel completely different after a few miles on regular ground instead of asphalt. The asphalt kills my feet. So I'm feeling much more confident that I can make the 20. But I did the trail around there's a lake called Hargis Lake in just outside of Circleville, Ohio. So I did that about 1 hour and 57 minutes. So there was sections where I had to go pretty slow. Plus there was also some sketch sections like there was a creek crossing that instead of a bridge, they thought it would be a great idea to like put these like concrete blocks to walk across the creek. All right. And the blocks, you'd stand on them and the blocks would wiggle. It's like, glad I had my trekking poles there because that's going to save me from falling on my ass. But, you know, I managed to get across that. The worst parts were the north side of the lake were, with all the rain, was fairly mushy. So I had a couple of places that I had to, like, literally was walking through, like, 2-3 inch thick mud and water and stuff, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, my shoes cleaned up pretty nice, although I am gonna, just so that you know, I have a pair of shoes like I'm going to wear on the hike. I'm probably gonna order another pair of Ultra Lone Peak 7s on Amazon because they're not as cheap as what I got them at Sierra, but Sierra's plumb out of that shoe again, so. See our trading post that is. So, but this is the first hike where I truly needed the trekking poles because there's hills that I really need, like a pretty steep hills on there that I had to use the trekking pole to help get up the hill. So, and my cheaper ones I got on Amazon worked great. They were steel instead of carbon fiber. So, but. That was like a good hike. I carried a lot of times. I'll wear like. To be honest, I didn't really need to take a pack with me. I probably would have just been fine with like a fanny pack or a much smaller bag or something. But I've been wearing the pack that I'm going to take on my hike, which will have like not just like it'll have my like some of my camera gear and socks and first aid kit and sunblock and you know all the typical things you might want to take on a hike, maybe a few snacks just in case I want to eat between stops.
Did you take a specialty phone harness to play Pikmin Bloom, or do you just hold it in your hand while you walk?
No, I just hold it in my hand.
Oh, okay. Because Pikmin Bloom, I don't know, that was my way to segue into talking about my new favorite obsession, is Pikmin Bloom. I don't know if any of you guys have started playing that, but I have literally gone on so many walks in the past week specifically because of this app.
Oh, I hadn't heard of that one. Okay.
Yeah, so like a Pokemon Go type thing, but I don't know if you guys ever played Pikmin, but I was obsessed with Pikmin. And it's the same concept as Pokemon Go, but applied to the... But basically with a Pikmin skin on top. You get these little Pikmin sprouts, and you grow them by walking, and it's actually super freaking fun. I am kind of obsessed with it. Really, really fun. And it's like you kind of like walk around, and instead of battling other people, you like work together to battle mushrooms, and it's really kicking me in that 90s nostalgia, and I love it.
Another Niantic game. Niantic was the one who started with Ingress, then Pokemon Go, and this is yet another one. There was another one too they had, which I forget the name of the other Niantic game, and it was actually not all that different than Pikmin Blue Bloom. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I can't remember it. But that's not the Pokemon point.
It sounds, you said not Pokemon familiar, Go, yeah. Not Pikmin Bloom, but like a different one.
Yeah.
Ingress?
Ingress.
Is that Niantic?
Yeah, it was.
Is that the one you're thinking of, or are you thinking of a different one?
No, a different one.
Oh, but I was playing Pikmin Bloom today, and it was actually really funny while I was walking, trying to fill one of the flowers, because you basically like go within range of a giant flower and you plant flowers around it to make it bloom. And I found a geocache just while I was walking around doing this little Pikmin Bloom thing. I found a whole geocache. I was like, oh my goodness. I felt like a main character.
No way, they got Monster Hunter now?
Yeah.
Monster Hunter now, actually. Also by Niantic.
Yeah, I'm thinking at this point you could probably just like chat GPT your way into making your own freaking hunt and find game just by reskinning what's already available on the market.
So I'm trying to look at what they have here. Oh, it's like somebody, a friend of mine shared this video that was supposedly the trailer for Back to the Future 4 with Tobey Maguire in it. And it's a deep fake. She got caught.
Everything from this point on is going to be either a deep fake or claimed to be a deep fake.
Right.
Yeah, in another like 5 or 10 years, we're not even gonna have actors, like actual actors. Everything's just going to be, you know, AI generated faces and voices. Nobody gets paid but the studio.
Which, you know, in a way, I mean, actors are kind of overpaid anyway for a lot of things that they do, so maybe it would be good to kind of remove that as a thing that people do and get back to the old being a doctor and being... Yeah, but we do need more people to go to college and become doctors and nurses and actually do things.
They're already floating this on like Kindle bookstore and stuff, AI-generated books, which doesn't sound good to me.
No, not yet. Yeah.
One step closer to Idiocracy.
Yeah. Since we're back to the book club stuff, has anybody here read anything by Benedict Jacka?
No.
Nope.
If you like urban fantasy, I highly recommend.
I put the link for that game in the Mumble Chat page. It's Peridot. Peridot is the name of the game that another Niantic game that I played.
And you say
I got bored of it quick.
When you say urban fantasy, Joe, what are you talking, like, it's going to date me, Nine Princes and Amber kind of stuff?
You're talking about his dark works?
I've not read that, but it's urban fantasy. That's like fantasy in modern settings, right?
Yes, okay. Correct. In like cities and stuff, yeah. Yes.
I think the only type of that I've read, I guess, would be the Chronicles of Amber series, but that was back in the...
Yeah, the Chronicles of Amber, it would qualify, but I think that's a little different. Yeah. But no, I mean, if you haven't read, like, Jim Butcher, The Dresden Files...
Oh, well, I have read one of those, I think.
Yeah, that's urban fantasy.
Okay.
And then Benedict Jacka has two series, one he's finished and one that he's just started. The first series that he wrote was the Alex Verus series, which is really good. I greatly enjoyed it. I re-listened to it. It's like 12 or 14 books or something crazy like that. And then he just started another one called The Inheritance of Magic. And he finished the first book, and in this, I think the second book releases this year. And it also, the first book was really good, and I knew I shouldn't have read it until at least the second book came out, but yeah.
Now, my youngest daughter is petitioning on our upcoming 9-hour drive next week from Saturday to go to the beach. She is trying her best to force me and my wife to listen to book one of A Court of Thorns and Roses. I don't know. It's ACOTAR is what it's called. Some fairy world thing.
Meh.
It sounds awful.
Sounds like something I think we listened to when I was younger, driving in the car with Dan. But I think it actually wasn't that bad. But anyway, I got to get going, guys. I have work in the morning. But it was so great to be on and great to talk with y'all and everything. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Good talking. All right, guys. Have a good night.
Contains mild violence and sexual descriptions. So unless you want to listen to that with your kid, I'd say that's a hard pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's adult.
IBM confirms. IBM confirms it's buying HashiCorp. Interesting. Okay, that's cool. So HashiCorp is in HashiCorp Vault. Terraform.
Wait, who's buying them?
IBM.
Oh, there we go. Huh? Way.
That'll fly well.
Oh, now that you're back, Dan, did you ever get to watch Fallout?
Oh, I didn't go anywhere. I've been here the whole time. I didn't know you were looking for me.
Oh, I asked you earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. We watched the first two episodes. So far. Think? Oh, wait. Did we watch more than two? No, it's only been two episodes. I'm digging it, man. Yeah, I really
it's
am.
Good. It's good.
I was like, it's been, oh my gosh, it's been over a decade since I played the first Fallout, like Fallout 3. And it's like, I know it's kind of loosely tied to the game, like the game, what she has to do is not really what you have to do in the game.
Yeah,
but like the places are very reminiscent of the game and stuff. I'm digging. Yeah, it's really cool.
And you've seen the Brotherhood of Steel, their armor. It's dead on from the games.
Yes, they did a really good job with that. It is really cool. I'm enjoying it very much. I'm assuming that they're going to explain the ghoul a bit more. Obviously you piece it together who the ghoul is, but I'm just curious of like if they go into a little bit more detail of the time span of the ghoul.
Yeah,
and I hope
they do and they don't. I mean, they don't really get into. You get his whole backstory and his motivation. You get that.
So I'm digging it. It is.
Yeah, and it ends well. I mean, you can tell there's going to be a season two, and it's good.
It almost makes me want to go play the game.
Yeah.
Although I tried to play Fallout 4 and I just couldn't get into it. I can't get into those kind of games anymore.
But I thought all the cast was good.
Oh yeah, yeah, the cast. There's a lot of violence. I'm surprised my wife is enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, it's fun. It is a fun show.
And they do a real good job with the effects. I mean, the world building, the scenery, it's amazing.
Yeah, that I saw like I keep seeing like Facebook shorts on buying vintage crap to make your Fallout room. you know, like buying shit from the 50s, like old school fans and stuff like that. And I thought, hey, that's not a bad idea. But, and I also saw like a Facebook short of buying a Pip Boy kit, a kit to make your own Pip Boy. But I might see.
There's about 1.5 million different like Raspberry Pi Pip Boy builds. Yeah,
there are. So. There are. Yep. But like I kind of want to play the game too. But the thing I'm afraid of is like, how much fucking time am I gonna lose? Like, I remember when we got Luke his X360, and I fired it up like on Christmas Eve, and downloaded the Skyrim that came with it, and lost 12 hours the next day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I don't want to do that. Yeah,
I love gaming. I do, but I had this thing called a job, and uh-huh. a family, and yeah, I get to play some Skyrim. But, you know, it's going to take me forever to get anywhere really in the game because
right?
a couple hours here, a couple hours there.
It's a slog.
Yeah, I can't, you know, just sit down and grind it like I could in back in the day.
Yep. Yep. It's like the interesting thing is you know, the things I'm looking at now, as I'm getting older of buying, or I'm like, why am I buying another pair of shoes? Because I'm gonna buy another pair of Ultralong Peaks, but just
where
make
I was
sure I have
next with that yeah. was, you know, I can't really do online gaming either because, you know, all the people that
right?
really stay on online gaming are the people
all
that
the
do have
time.
20 hours a day to dedicate
that's
to this.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm never going to be able to compete with them, so
you get your ass kicked. Yeah. Not that you couldn't be better. It's just like, you know, have this magical thing of a 40 plus hour a week job.
Mm-hmm.
And a family. And education in my case. So it's like, yeah, I don't have fucking time for it.
I've gone down the just researching. I mean, I've not done it yet. I did it years ago, but the DOSBox rabbit hole and playing some old Abandonware.
Well, that's always fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I love doing that.
I'm looking at
Zork. I want to play Zork again.
I want to play.
Well, you can play that online.
Yeah. I want to play Daggerfall.
The original Icewind Dale.
Damn, those are old games, man. Those are old
games. They are.
You should try out Arcanum.
Oh, you know what I didn't say, speaking of games? When we went out to the Natural Bridge, we took a detour on the way back to Roanoke, and we went to the Roanoke Starcade, which is a city-run museum where they have... Well, there's a city-run museum where they have a bunch of, like, vintage things in there, like displays, but they have a pinball arcade, and they have a regular arcade called the Starcade, and it is just three big rooms filled with arcade machines. A few of them were the multi-cade type arcade machines, but the majority of them were the original
standalone, yeah,
cabinets and everything. And it's $15. Play as much as you want the whole day. And it was really, like, there were games I went in there. Joel, they had Afterburner in there for you, baby.
Awesome.
And they had, I played through as much as I could at the time, stand playing the Star Wars trilogy game.
Truly horrible.
Oh. And I enjoyed it up until I would have to go do like a, like the spaceship stuff was great. It was hard, but it was great. Made completely easy by the unlimited push that button to continue. So you push your way through it. But the right. scenes where you, the levels where you had to like walk through yeah. Hoth and shoot stuff or fight with the lightsaber. Oh my God, was that annoying, because it still used flight controls. So if you wanted to block up, you had yeah. to pull down. And I found that really annoying. But there were games I completely forgot about, like Assault and
yeah.
games that I still forget about now that I love.
Xenophobe.
And Tempest and Quix. Xenophobe, I played that. That was there.
That's a great
really,
game.
You know, there was a game there I was real. I had never seen this game before. I can't remember. I played a lot of Time Pilot. I can't remember what it was called, but it was from like 1971, and there was a biplane in there, and it looked like a holographic biplane, but it was just completely done with mirrors, and it was just on this rotating thing that it just circled around, and there was a mountain to fly over and a bridge to go under. And then there was a barn you could go through. And then there was a couple of loops also. And it was just like this old school game like that. It was really wild. It was kind of like on the level and roughly the same time period as I don't think it was called Jackal. There was this old line, like Asteroid Line kind of line art game that I'm talking about, where you were a tank or a jeep, I think it was.
Battle
it was
Zone?
A helicopter that you had to fight. No, but there was like this big block in the middle of the screen, and you had to run around. You had to avoid getting shot by the helicopter, and you had to shoot the helicopter. But it was just all line graphics. That was, I forget what that was called. That wasn't there, but it kind of reminded me of that same time period. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. We got to close the show up in a minute, but
yeah,
it
yeah.
was really cool being at that arcade. Yeah, I very much enjoyed it. I did.
Hey, have you watched any of 8-Bit Guy's arcade channel that he has now? I'm trying to remember the name of it.
I have not gotten
if
to
I
that
do,
yet.
If I do, because he and his brother are opening up an arcade in the Dallas area.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I'll have to find it, because he's been doing restorations of, like, he did a restoration of, I want to say the original Star Wars game, I thought. I'll have to look. I'll shoot it your way.
All right. I played Dragon's Lair, a fair bit of Dragon's Lair, too. And I found it both not as hard as when I originally played it, but frustrating, because it's mostly just, it's absolutely, it's timing, but it's like a lot of,
yeah.
If you could just memorize the chain, yeah, you get it that way. It's just like, left, right, up, sword, sword, left, right, up, sword. So, you know, whatever, however that pattern goes. And I was like,
yeah.
I just feel like I'm just trying to memorize a pattern. Like a Simon type game. Anyway, we got to wrap this up. I got to play us out. Thank you, everybody. This is the last show for April. Is it not? Is it?
The next one will be on the first.
30 days in April? Or is it 31?
30.
Yes, May 1st. Yep, May 1st next week. So this is the last show for April. Have a great week, everybody, and stay. Is your hike coming up soon, Joe?
It's like August.
Not until August. Yeah, August.
Oh, not until August. Okay, that's right. All right. Well, here
sure.
we go. We'll play out. Enjoy the weather.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over. You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
He didn't do Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He did a restoration of the one of the Nintendo Play Choice games and Street Fighter 2, a few others too, but the name of it's Time Rift Cafe Arcade. And that's the YouTube channel I'll put in the mumble chat.
Okay.
He does some really great work of making these things look like they are practically brand new. And they still work, which it's really cool that somebody's doing stuff like this. Because a lot of those games, too, like the arcade games would not look right if you just replaced the CRT with an LCD. It just wouldn't look right.
Probably wouldn't look right either.
So,
that's why a lot of your purists have those, you know, higher quality CRTs, even though they're a little bit smaller.
Yep.
You get that really good picture from them, and you don't have to worry about things like, you know, frame rate.
Yep. Like, ooh, he does a recap of Atari Force Liberator, which I don't even remember that one. The Play Choice ones I do. The Play Choice, Nintendo Play Choice games were essentially NES machines in an arcade form factor.
Oh, I always love watching the recap videos of like the Nomads.
Yeah.
Sega Nomads.
And
the Game Gears. Those were fun to watch too. But I find the Nomads really interesting because Genesis games in a handheld format.
Right, yeah. Yep. That was always one of those ones I wanted. That and the Atari Lynx was another handheld I wanted and never got. I should buy a Lynx.
You have money now. You should buy a Lynx.
Yeah. I don't know which version I'd want, the original one or the reissued one. It's a little smaller.
No, get the original one, you know, completely rebuild it.
Yeah, replace the
replace the screen with an updated screen. Recap it with modern caps as opposed to, you know, the old ones that leak.
I do have a QuirksCon, which is coming up in May, that I'm probably going to go to. That's a day video game thing. They moved to the fairgrounds, thankfully. The first year I went, they had it like one of the metro parks in the gymnasium there, and they had nowhere near enough parking for the show. So, but it was still fun. They moved it to the state fairgrounds, and it's much easier to park now.
That's one of those things where you go in, they pull it out.
Yeah,
once you wake up, they're like, get the hell out of here.
Yep, it's laparoscopic. I had mine out 3 years ago, but mine was like an emergency thing. I had no symptoms, and I woke up one morning, and it was just like full body pain. They had to put me in the hospital just to control the pain. That was a Sunday, and I got it out on a Monday.
And they were like, sorry, Dave, we got to remove it through your urethra. Because the suppository's in the way.
If you were a woman, that's how they would do it.
So high on Dilaudid that I don't remember much about it.
Oh, yeah. I feel bad for your daughter, man, but I'm glad that there's an end in sight to the pain.
Yeah.
She said, can't they just take me now?
I think our last finals tomorrow, and Wednesday's the quickest they can do it.
Oh. Holy mackerel.
Wait, what are they taking out?
Gallbladder.
Wait, say that one more time.
Gallbladder.
Oh, gallbladder. Okay, I got you. I got you.
That's the southern gallbladder, right? Filled up with pork, not pork, with what would it be filled up with?
Cholesterol.
Yeah, biscuits and
gravy.
Chicken fried gravy.
Yeah.
Chicken fried steak gravy.
Yeah.
Hey, it's 8:31. Let's get this show on the road, man. I got places to be, people to see. What's going
well,
on here?
I'm just making sure, you know, people want to get on the show. I didn't want to just barrel out of here. We never start on time anyway.
I'll give you a 4-minute grace period.
Wait, what? Thanks.
Get your show together.
When does it even start?
It started already.
It did? Oh my god. We're behind schedule.
Yeah.
We should fire these people.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, show, how come no one
you
has
can mute
ever
yourself.
Oh, oops. We thought we were muted.
Oh. You know what you should somebody's crying at the basement door.
No.
I hear
what
somebody.
Are we, your servants? I thought we were here to be guests on the show, not to do your... No, okay, go ahead, Lily. Go ahead, open the basement door for him. No, it's fine. We'll do all your dirty work for you.
Basement door! Okay.
You lied to us. You sent us on a false mission.
What am I doing here, Joel? Dave, where's Joel? Joel's going to be late. Joe should be popping in any minute. Apparently Joe's late. Too many J's. Okay. What am I missing here? You know, I play Joe's daughter saying I am short, but I feel like I can't play that too close to the sushi in the dining room thing because it feels wrong. You know what I mean? It just feels wrong. And I guess you could say if it feels wrong and too close to anything Bagwell says, it feels wrong. Maybe I shouldn't play it.
You sort of got to play it.
Yeah, I know.
Life is meant to be lived and experienced. Don't hold back.
All right. So, Dave, what episode is this?
1049.
You are correct, sir. What, did you look at the website?
Yeah, I did.
I bet you did. Joe's here.
Cheater.
Good to hear from you, Joe. Maybe he's here. All right.
I am here.
Good. All right, now we can get started. 10:49. Woo! Let's start this and get right into it. This is episode 10:49. 5, 4, 3, 2,